coming up next. Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
This week in history, about 125 years ago, the first Groundhog Day was celebrated on February 2nd in 1887. The rodent meteorologist was celebrated for the first time at Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. As the tradition goes, if a groundhog comes out of its hole and sees its shadow, there will be six more weeks of winter weather. No shadow means an early spring.
It's Groundhog Day!
Groundhog time.
1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat.
Weatherman Phil Connors.
Of course, that was from the 1993 movie Groundhog Day. Just like the groundhog and the weather, we're probably no better a predictor of business success. The weather may be a 50-50 proposition, but making it in business certainly isn't. But there's something afoot that is perhaps beginning to change all that. The tsunami of data that's being collected every time we surf the internet. At the micro level, it can help determine who's visiting a website. At the macro level, it's used to forecast sea changes in consumer behavior. On today's show, we're going to speak with a couple of experts who understand how all that information is being used as a means of generating affiliate income and for determining a business's rank on Google. We'll also be talking about some cool apps for entrepreneurs and about some hot local deals. Stay with us for more about search engine and affiliate marketing here on Minding Your Business. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions. We'll answer on the air by calling 866-712-1300 or tweet us at MYB Media. On Monday, the Small Business Administration announced the winners of the Apps for Entrepreneurs Challenge. The SBA had recently reached out to developers to create apps that would make it easier for people to access federal, state, and local government resources for starting or growing a business. The nationwide competition offered $20,000 in total prizes. And the winners are, in first place, Somesh Kumar from Fremont, California, for SBA Gems. The app helps find loans, grants, permits, and more. Three were named in second place, Capitalist, Small Business Toolbox, and SBA Loan Search App, which helps users find everything from federal databases for licenses, awards, and proposals to loans and venture capital. The three third-place winners were Energy SBA, SBA Alert, and Everything for the Entrepreneur. These apps focused on helping users find property rights, oil and gas leases, solar-related information, and contract opportunities. Several are for Android or Windows Mobile only, but SB Alert, which lets you set up notifications about RFPs, is available for the iPhone as well. Everything for the Entrepreneur, which is for finding small business innovation research grants, is only for the iPhone. The SBA has an iPhone app of its own to help you find business advisors, and it also includes a startup cost calculator. For links to these apps and more, visit the resources page at mybmedia.com. In local investment news, Light Sciences Oncology received more than $1.2 million in a new financing round this week. The Bellevue company is developing light infusion therapy, an innovative light-activated treatment for solid tumors. Symform, a privately held company in Seattle, secured $500,000 in new funding earlier this week. Founded in 2007 by a couple of ex-Microsofties, the company is developing cost-effective solutions to solve large-scale distributed data management problems. Later in the week, they were able to raise another $2 million from West River Capital. Buyami obtained $250,000 in new financing this week. Headquartered in Seattle, the company helps streamline the relationship between banks and their clients when it comes to borrowing base certificates. Thanks to Zonomy for background on these stories. You're listening to Minding Your Business and Money Radio, 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If there's one thing that most small business owners are focused on, it's their Google rank. So today we are pleased to have search engine expert Marianne Sweeney, who's going to give us the scoop on the latest Google algorithms. Marianne Sweeney is the principal consultant at Daedalus Information Systems. She is a frequent presenter at national conferences on search and information architecture. She started the business around the time the browser wars began between Netscape and Explorer in 1998. Before starting her own consulting practice to help clients optimize their websites, Marianne was the director of search services at Essentium. And before that, she spent about 7 years at Microsoft as a web producer. Fresh from delivering the Not Your Mother's SEO keynote at the 2010 Polish Information Architecture Summit in Warsaw, I'm happy to have the search therapist, Marianne Sweeney, here today. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Marianne.
Thank you so much for having me, Robin.
Google has been doing a lot with changing how they provide search results. I think it's called Panda. Can you tell us about that?
Certainly. I've been referring to Panda as the bear that ate link building and keyword optimization.
Wait a minute. Hold that thought. So link building, give us a little clarification.
Exactly, which are two of the primary tactically based activities that you can do to drive traffic to your site or manipulate your positioning in search engine results.
And it's basically getting a link from another site
exactly.
to link to your site.
So keyword optimization means that you are focused on certain keyword phrases and representing them in meaningful places throughout your site in the content, also putting them in link text or stuffing them in image file descriptions or stuffing them into headings, basically creating a repetitive sequence of this keyword so that the search engine will say, wow, this phrase is on this page a lot, so this page must be about this phrase, when in actuality it's likely not the case. Link building is something else. You may recall last year around this time, JCPenney's was found out to have been using a search firm that, according to search engine experts, employed the most egregious form of link building or link spam that they have seen. Basically, what was happening is entities in India, say, or the Philippines, Vietnam, individuals there are employed at a low salary to go out and basically put a link to your site anywhere on the web. I mean, it could be on an auto parts directory. It could be in the bottom of some article on basket weaving. It could be on a website about cat furniture. So Penny's was able to achieve high ranking for single term phrases like bedding because they had thousands, hundreds of thousands of meaningless links from sites pointing to them.
And was that beneficial to them, all this artificial?
It was linkage? Beneficial in the sense that usability studies tell us that 95% of the people who do a search do not go past the first page. So being on the first page of search results can be useful to you. And certainly being in the top five search results can be useful to you.
So did it hurt JCPenney?
It certainly did because they were found out. And
by?
One of their competitors went to Google, and Google is able to reverse engineer the location of the links. Penny's was basically removed from search results for a number of their terms that they had been placing very well. This is a company that makes in excess of $1 billion off the sales on their website. So it was quite the deal. And this can happen when you outsource your search work to a firm and then either do not work closely with them to understand what they're doing and the ramifications of it, or are dealing with an unscrupulous entity that is creating practices that produce a result but hide what the practice is from
so
you.
The artificial.
Exactly.
Side of it, you might say.
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, unscrupulous search out there. They call it black hat, where people are doing nefarious things that are against the search engine guidelines. And then you have some tactics which are in keeping with the search engine guidelines, but in a very loose basis. So link building is one. JCPenney's an example. And another example was Overstock.com or Overstock.co. And what they did was even more clever. The black hat slang term for it is parasite hosting. Search engines value certain sources better than others. They like educational sources like EDU websites because they feel they're more honest. They also like organizational websites like the Red Cross and the Gates Foundation. They feel that these people are more true and more relevant. So what Overstock.com did is they went out to college students and they said, we'll give you a gift certificate for $75 on Overstock if you'll publish this article on your website. Each student at a university has their own page. And basically, Overstock was getting hundreds, if not thousands, of links from valued educational institutions with articles like, you're coming to the University of Washington. Don't forget to bring your vacuum cleaner. And the vacuum cleaner would link to the vacuum cleaner page on Overstock. And before you know it, when you type in vacuum cleaner at Overstock, it's the number at Google, it's the number one result.
Getting back to Panda.
Yes.
Give me a quick description in like 30 seconds and then we'll come back after the break.
So Panda is Google's attempt to switch the focus of relevance ranking from PageRank, which was came out in the 1990s when the web was very young and is easily manipulated, as we've seen, to a more user experience role, meaning something that is determined by the quality of the experience, not the number of links.
Okay. We've been speaking with Marian Sweeney of Dataless Information Systems. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. Have you been considering how search might affect your business? Tell us by calling 866-712-1300 or send us a tweet at MYB Media. We'll be back with Marian Sweeney, and you're listening to KKWL 1300 AM. I'm Robin Block. We've been speaking with Marian Sweeney of Dataless Information Systems, and we were talking about the new changes Google is making with Panda. And before the break, Marian was talking about the difference between on the page that Google looks at, the on the page activities that you do to drive search, and the off the page activities. So why don't we continue, Marian, with that discussion?
I'll absolutely pick up on that. So off the page factors would be the number of links pointing to your site. And as we've seen, that's an easy figure to manipulate. With Panda, which is not named after the bear, but is named after the two engineers who conceived of the algorithms to create this change, and who are, by the way, not related, but both named Panda. Panda now, the Google algorithm, looks at what is on your page and how do your visitors engage with that? Meaning, on your homepage, are there too many images or too many pictures or too many ads compared to the amount of text that is there? Is the text well placed on the page? Usability studies have shown that when people go to a web page, they tend to focus on the middle. They don't notice the navigation at the top or the images on the side. We glance at the middle, we see if what's there applies to what we're looking for, and if it doesn't, we will then exit immediately or bounce back to the search results. Bounce rate is a key factor, a key analytic for any small business owner, any site owner, and is available through many analytics programs that you can pay for, or through Google Analytics, which is free, although you are sharing the data with Google itself.
Is that a problem, do you think? I mean,
it's not a problem. I mean, there's a cost involved. So you are actually opening up your site's activity to Google's data mining. And in turn, Google uses that information ostensibly to enhance their service offering in search. How enhanced it is in the eye of the beholder. And a number of individuals have been finding flaw with the quality of Google search results. On a website called Search Engine Land, Danny Sullivan, who is a significant thought leader in the search world, wrote an article this week where he talked about how the quality of Google's search results have shifted downward somewhat as a result of the constant changes that they've been doing. And I believe personally on their focus of incorporating and growing Google Plus as an entity.
Tell us about Google Plus. I mean, it's the social network. Why don't we talk a little bit about
Certainly
that?
Certainly it is. Google tried to get in business with Facebook some time ago And that activity was thwarted in large part because Microsoft owns, I think it's 1.6% of Facebook. So Microsoft was never going to let Google in the walled garden. And in point of fact, when you do a search on Facebook, Facebook's search engine searches within Facebook.com, and then they also pass the search through to Bing. When Google was unable to gain access to the valuable information inside Facebook, they decided to start their own social network, and that became Google Plus.
Well, they had Google Buzz before that.
And well, Google Buzz was actually involved in their mail. I thought the mail program where
they were trying to make it social.
It was like a chat program where you could, it was like Twitter and chat and your mail and all of it put together. And in point of fact, it was so not successful that I've forgotten about it. I never got involved with Google Buzz.
But it just seems like Google keeps trying these social things and it hasn't really achieved much success.
And it gets back to what we were talking about before on the idea of how can we incorporate the input of thought processing bipeds into determining what's relevant. The big problem with search is that machines...
Did you just call us bipeds?
Yes, we are. We're all thought processing bipeds. And we have opposable thumbs.
We're just walking brains with two feet. Yeah, okay.
But basically, machines see things differently. Machines are very logical. You know, this is relevant because it fits a set of criteria. Yes, no, yes, no. But we are not logical. We're squishy. We're emotional. We're influenced by outside events. We're influenced by where we're looking. We're influenced by the emotional state while we're looking.
So we're actually much more than computers.
Not only that.
I'm so glad you said that.
We drive them crazy because we have words that a single word that means multiple things. A dog can be a bad bet. It's a bounty hunter in Hawaii. It's a pet that you have. There are search engines don't understand this. The level of complexity to generate the type of results we're seeing is commendable. However, there's always the opportunity to bring in what are actual people. And that is what Google has been trying to do. And they are now accelerating with the incorporation of Google Plus information into your actual search results.
We're here with Marianne Sweeney of Dataless Information Systems. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. Give us your questions. Call us on 866-712-1300 or tweet us at MYB Media. We were talking earlier about Google Analytics. What should a small business be looking to measure?
So what Google is measuring when they put you in their search results is click-through, bounce rate, conversion. So click-through is, does someone click on your result when it appears? And do they do something when they go to the page? If they do something, if they click, if they go through, that means that you've presented a compelling experience and you're likely relevant. The third element of that conversion is, did the searcher resolve their information need? Meaning, did they stop searching when they got to your site and go somewhere else? Or did they go back to the search results and recreate their search or try something else? So Google Analytics or any analytics program will tell you what your bounce rate is, how many people, what percentage of people come in and then leave immediately. I advise my clients that any bounce rate over, say, 35% is noteworthy, and you want to look at that and see if you can resolve it.
And how would you resolve that?
Well, how I would resolve bounce rate is to look at the page and say, is there something here I want the customer to do? If there is, have I buried that interaction in
like
a block
of text?
Like
the action button or something?
Exactly. Like, okay. Is there a link you want them to click on? Is there a next step that you would like them to take? If there is something you want them to do, either to go deeper into your site or to follow the information to another site, you want to make sure that that interaction is presented in multiple ways. They may miss it in text, and so you might want to break it out of the text or put it in the side, you know, a link, a list of links on the side.
And this is true for more than just the homepage or the purchase page. This would be any page, really.
Exactly. Now, some, like your Contact Us page, may have a 60% bounce rate because people are going there just to get your address and your phone number.
And so then they would call. They go offline.
For some pages, it's okay. But for your homepage, And for navigation pages on your site, a high bounce rate is noteworthy.
You mean the navigation page, like the main
right,
the
like
key
your
pages
about
from
us
your navigation
page or your services page, you know, your overview pages where you sort of want to lead people into the site and into the information.
One question I get a lot too is you talk about having keywords and the right content in the pages. Is that important to do, have different ones for every page, or can you use the same keywords for each page?
Well, I dislike keyword optimization, and I always encourage people to think in terms of concepts and in context, because keyword optimization is very old school, and with the introduction of Panda is likely to become less successful. What I advise my clients to do is to look at how they would find themselves on the web, meaning, you know, if you're in a search engine optimization field, you would likely go to Google and type in SEO Seattle. I then recommend using a resource called Google Insights for Search. Basically, this is Google opening up their search logs for querying. They will allow you to set wherever geography you want, whether it's worldwide, US, or country specific, and they will allow you to set a time frame. And then they will enable you to compare phrases, which would be the most better to use. And they will show you the search behavior around that phrase, in addition to which they will also show you contextually similar or related phrases that actual customers have used. By using a tool like Google Insights for Search and the Google AdWords tool, what you're going to get is a clearer picture of how your customers are looking to find what you do. And that's what you should incorporate in your site content also.
So it seems like there's a lot that you have to focus on. When does it make sense to do some of it yourself? And what can you do yourself? And what, quickly, when would you want to hire it out?
I would say that it makes sense to go. There's a lot of online resources that you can look at to educate yourself. I'm always in favor of educating clients and in a DIY approach. If your site is very big, or if you are very busy, then I would suggest to hiring it out to a firm that's going to work with you and not like Penny's work on your behalf.
Makes a lot of sense to me. Our show today is all about internet marketing here on Minding Your Business and Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. Our next guest is going to talk about affiliate marketing. If you have any questions, call 866-712-1300.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
Our second guest here today is Angel Jimbazov. He's the editor-in-chief and co-publisher for Revenues, and he's an award-winning affiliate marketer. The online magazine covers many of the income-generating topics on the net, like search engine marketing, mobile, micro-content, and security. Originally from Bulgaria, Angel has worked in journalism and online marketing. More recently, Angel served as outsourced program manager at Jones Soda, and he currently provides similar services for companies like Keen Footwear and Vitamin Angel. Angel's awards include the 2006 Affiliate Manager of the Year Award at the Affiliate Summit, In-House Manager of the Year Award from A-Best Web, and a second Affiliate Manager of the Year Award in 2009. Here to share with us what he knows about making money online, Angel Jimbazov. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Thank you for having me.
There are all types of sites that offer a small payment for referring website traffic or when a sale is made online. Amazon seems to be one of the earliest ones to offer an affiliate program. Are the referrers actually making any money with these programs?
Well, I mean, I think it's a question of whether or not, you know, you want to make pizza money online or whether or not it's going to be a real business for you. Gnomedex, which is no longer a conference, but it was run by Chris Perillo, was here in Seattle. I spoke in front of Gnomedex once and I asked the audience how many of them consider themselves affiliate marketers. And almost out of 300 people, maybe two or three raised their hands. I then asked how many of them had Amazon links on their sites, and almost everybody raised their hands. Those Amazon links, which they're getting commission for, is a type of affiliate marketing. And affiliate marketing essentially was developed because larger companies wanted to get outreach to smaller publishers, and it made no sense trying to deal with them on a one-to-one basis. So they created a platform where they could come up to a publisher ahead of time, which is, this is somebody who owns a website or a blog, and say to them, would you run our ad on your website? And instead of us paying you in advance, which was normally the normal form of advertising, will instead pay you a commission if somebody that you refer from your website makes a purchase on our website. And it was a way for smaller publishers to work with people like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Overstock. A lot of the Inc. 500 companies that you think of out there, REI, so on, have affiliate programs currently. And the people who do well in those programs have developed either some kind of tactic or some kind of niche to be able to refer customers to those websites, depending on what the product is.
So there are lots of startups that think they're going to get funded. I mean, a lot of them start with Google Ads. That's easy to sign up for, and people get a pay-per-click kind of spiff or whatever. But there are lots of other kinds of ads that they think are going to finance their businesses. Is that actually possible?
If you're looking for financing via an ad model, I think you're in for hard times. A lot of angels out there and a lot of VCs do not feel that advertising is a sustainable model, or at least a sexy model for them. I think the main issue is,
could you make pizza money, though?
You could make pizza money.
Like
you can
enough
make
to
pizza
pay
money
for your hosting or something?
If you want to throw up an Amazon link to your favorite author and just talk about that favorite author, you'll probably make some pizza money from it, right? But if you really wanted to make it into a real business, you have to have developed a niche that makes sense. For example, let's say you're an expert in bass fishing. And while you're out bass fishing, you're creating videos about how, you know, you're doing the fishing, about the equipment you're using. And then in those videos and in that content that you're developing, you then put links to, different fishing outlets out there, to REI, to Moose Jaw, to all these places that are in the outdoor space, talking about the equipment you're using, Bass Pro Shops.
So all you those build companies, your audience, so
right,
to speak.
And all those companies have products that your audience is interested in, that you're using yourself in the content. That tie-in, that form of marketing is probably the most sustainable out of all those different types. Almost everybody just tries to throw everything at the wall and say, even though it's not relevant to my audience, I'd like to run an ad from Blue Nile talking about diamonds, even though my audience is into, you know, WWE wrestling. It's not, there needs to be an audience match.
There has to be an affinity or a relationship between the content being delivered and the audience you're trying to build.
Yeah,
just like any magazine, you might say.
Just like any magazine. And it's true also for companies who want to step into this advertising space. If you're a small company and you want to go into affiliate marketing because it has a high return on ad spend for you and has a low risk, many companies think that they can just launch an affiliate program and people will send them customers and traffic. And it's a launch and forget kind of tactic. And it's not true. It's one of the highest touch points in terms of actual relationship building out of any of the marketing channels, which is why I find it funny that Google itself has an affiliate network, which is the Google Affiliate Network. And Google doesn't understand people, as Marianne pointed out earlier.
Because they're machines.
Because they're machines. And this is a company that needs to be building on relationships. It doesn't do a good job building a social network. Its affiliate network itself is also not particularly good because Google doesn't understand about building relationships. It figures it's just providing a platform for you to do so. And I think a lot of companies go into affiliate marketing as an advertiser too early before they understand some things about themselves. Do you have an analytics program in place, like Google Analytics? Do you know what your click-through rate is on most of your site? Do you know what your conversion rate is for once you bring
like,
in a customer?
Visitors to sales.
Visitors
conversion.
To sales, right. Okay. And also, how much are you willing to pay for a single customer? And depending on what that value is, when do you get what we call a lifetime value for that customer? In other words, after you've paid for bringing that customer to your site and developing them into a customer, at what point does that customer become profitable to you? Most companies don't understand those simple metrics about themselves and are stepping into a channel that's very, very Wild West, and oftentimes wondering why the channel's not working for them.
We've been speaking with Angel Jimbazov of Revenues.com. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. Have you ever wondered about whether offering affiliate fees was right for your business? Or have you ever participated in an affiliate program? Tell us by calling 866-712-1300 or tweet us at MYBMedia. When you want to put advertising on your site, like to make a little affiliate bump, pizza money, whatever, how big an audience do you really have to start actually getting any kind of significant income?
I don't know that you need a huge audience.
It's more targeted.
Right.
That's probably
one
more
of,
important.
One of the people I know out there is Mom Goes Green. So momgoesgreen.com. She is a mom blogger. And focused on turning her family from not being green focused at all to being very green focused in terms of what they're eating, what they have in the house, and so on. So when she decided to take on this process with her family, she started describing that process via a blog, almost journal-like, and then realized that two things. One, that the AdSense that she had on her site that she
That's
was running.
That's the Google AdSense.
The Google AdSense, which is on a cost per click basis. This is not affiliate stuff.
Oh, so affiliate is when you actually buy stuff?
Yeah. So, okay. So the difference is that Google's paying you for a click, where an affiliate, you're only paid when someone purchases through your link. So she had Google AdSense on there, and she started noticing that the advertising they started displaying was more relevant to her audience. Started showing green advertisers and so on. So she started doing some research and found out about Commission Junction, Linkshare, the Google affiliate network, ShareASale, which are the top four affiliate networks out there that are what we would consider legitimate affiliate networks. And she started looking for advertisers on those networks that were appropriate to a green audience, and started putting, instead of just a simple banner ad on her website, she started looking for products that they talked about that she herself was using, and putting links directly to those products and then making commissions through that.
And that pays substantially more than just a click through.
Well, it pays substantially more in the fact that it converts better. In affiliate advertising, what you're worried about is, how can I make the consumer that I'm sending the clicks to my website and to the advertiser, how can I make sure that I've educated them enough or pointed them in the right direction enough that when they land on the advertiser's website, they're closer to making a purchase?
So the pre-sale.
Right,
you
it's
might
a pre-sale.
Say. One thing that I've noticed with affiliate marketing is that you can have links on your website, but there's no guarantee somebody will click on that to go to the advertiser. They could simply just see the name of something like Amazon or something and just go directly to the site themselves. So how do you make sure you get paid for that?
I mean, that is one of the factors, right? Which is why from an advertiser's point of view, it's great for the advertiser. The advertiser gets free branding, essentially, by running through the affiliate channel, which is why a lot of advertisers approach it early and then wonder why they're not making any sales. They're like, well, great, we're getting free branding, but really it's supposed to be a sales channel and we're not making any sales because we haven't taken the time to develop our relationship with the publisher. From the publisher side of things, you want to run an ad, but you also obviously want to make money from that ad. And to me, it's about making sure that the content is relevant to the ad and incorporating in such a way that it makes sense to the consumer, that they don't feel they're being pushed an ad, but they feel they're participating in something.
And then they're more likely to click right there?
Right. For example, if you are talking about a product that you really love, let's say it's, you know, let's talk about, you know, one of my clients, which is Keen Shoes. Keen, the people who wear Keen shoes are very passionate about being outdoors, about the types of shoes that they wear, about where they're going to use the Keen sandals, about where they're going, how they're going to use the Keen boat shoes, about all those things about Keen that makes things Keen cool. And they'll talk about them, they'll share pictures and so on. If you're sharing a picture about a shoe and you're very passionate about it, and then that picture itself contains a link to the product itself, the person who clicks on that picture is not necessarily going to feel like they're being advertised toward. They're going to feel like they're taking part in your passion about the product. And that method is always going to convert better and sell more than simply just throwing out a banner ad and hoping somebody clicks on it.
In a way, a lot of it's still about concept and context and not just about trying to game the system. Our show today is all about SEO and affiliate marketing here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. If you have ideas or questions for us, call us at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. Where does social media fit into all this for the affiliate side of the world?
Well, so the one thing that's interesting about affiliate marketing is that it crosses a lot of different niches, right? And so in social media, everybody's trying to look at social and go, well, can I put out a coupon through Facebook or through Twitter and maybe get people to grab and use that coupon? That's a very simple method. It's also a very blunt force method in the fact that everybody does it and gets to be spammy after a little while. I think that one thing about social media, again, because it's so relationship focused, the idea is that to be able to distribute your content and develop an audience for your website before you pass it on to the advertiser. Websites that contain an audience are really what is valuable to advertisers, and advertisers will go out of their way to find niche audiences, which is why mom bloggers are being inundated these days by big companies who don't know how to deal with the mom bloggers, but reaching out to them and saying, hey, can you push X product if I just simply send you a copy of the product. And mom bloggers are like, well, we'd like to push the product, but you know what? You have to pay us. We just don't want to run a free ad for you because you've sent us a cool thing in the mail. And advertisers are getting more and more involved in that, which is why social media is being used to expand into that because it expands audiences.
We're here with affiliate marketing expert Angel Chimbazov and Marian Sweeney talking about SEO. And you're listening to Minding Your Business, the show created for small business here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block. We'll be bringing them both back for a panel discussion after the break. Once again, you're listening to 1300 KKOL, Minding Your Business. We've been discussing affiliate marketing with Angel Chimbazov, and now I'd like to have our first guest, Marian Sweeney, join us to continue our discussion about search and online marketing. So, Angel, you mentioned that there was a big fraud case last year involving affiliate marketing. Tell us about it.
Well, it's one of those examples of, again, the affiliate industry is very, very Wild West, and people always ask, is there money in the industry? And I think this was an interesting example that covers both. So last year, two different affiliates got indicted on federal charges under the RICO wire fraud laws for stealing money from eBay. eBay runs an affiliate program, and the tune of the money that was stolen was $25 million worth of commissions that were stolen by these two affiliates. And it was, the case is still pending in the courts, so obviously they're not convicted yet. But the method was that they were essentially stealing from other affiliates in eBay, and eBay wasn't doing a smart enough of a job policing that channel. So they would give away $25 million to two people who weren't actually driving them any new customers. So there is a lot of money in the channel, but obviously, like any channel, if it's not policed properly, there's also a lot of fraud.
I find it amazing that with all these little clicks, and the affiliate payments aren't that big. I mean, they could be $20, maybe $100 at some time. You know, to have all that add up to $25 million, and then eBay actually send somebody a check for that?
Well, it was over 6 years. So it's $25 million over 6 years. Still a lot of money.
Yeah, you would think when they were writing the check, they would go, there's something amiss.
That's why in the federal case, there's a question about whether or not people in eBay were complicit, not paying attention to what was happening. Because if you were really paying attention to that channel, you would notice that what seems to be an original customer was really a repeat customer, and that the original person who referred you that customer never, ever got paid. And the person who is getting paid never actually referred you any real traffic. And if somebody was really looking at that channel intelligently, they should have caught that.
Yeah, you would think so. That's kind of interesting. Since you brought up the whole government thing that they're looking into it, I mean, of course, SOPA has been in the news a lot, the Stop Online Piracy Act, and it didn't pass. But what I was kind of wondering, how do you think SOPA would affect each of your industries? Marianne?
Well, the interesting thing for me about SOPA and the other one, PIPA or whatever the other legislation is,
yeah.
That you have a government that fundamentally does not understand how the industry it is trying to regulate works. So you can't just stop one element of the web or of the internet. It was set up to be an anarchistic forum where people can do what they want, publish what they want, and say what they want. So what we have to look at is the models that are being used. The studios and the record companies have a legitimate claim. We finance albums. We don't get profits from tours. Radiohead could care less. They put one of their albums out for free. They make their money off of touring. So maybe everyone should do that. But it's not going to come from regulating the web. That's not going to happen, as we found out from the advocacy hackers took down a couple of the congressional websites. Wikipedia went dark. Mm-hmm. You know, it's too late. The genie's out of the bottle.
And it's been out for quite some time.
It is. And it's, like I said, we do this a lot where we look back and go, you know, maybe we should have been a little more judicious in how we release that information.
But this is America.
It is. You know? Well, and it's a worldwide phenomenon. That's the key. There is a digital divide, but now, you know, people in China are getting access to a limited web, but access to the web nonetheless.
Well, I'd like to throw out a very practical example with SOPA and PIPA. So let's say that you are a film fan and you write a film blog. And as a way to monetize that blog, you include ads from Netflix and you include ads from allposters.com, which are two companies that have affiliate programs. And as part of talking about that film, you play a clip from YouTube that is the film's clip. And let's say that film clip is owned by Warner Brothers. Now, Warner Brothers, let's say, takes offense. Warner Brothers, under SOPA, without talking to you, the person who's the fan of the film, can take down your website or take down, have the your IP or Tumblr, whoever, wherever your website's on, take it down without talking to you.
You mean
without,
your host.
Yeah, your host. Yeah. And without putting you in front of, you know, any kind of due process. And that's scary in the fact that people like sharing. I like talking about films. People like talking about films on Facebook and so on. So what point does that sharing, is that sharing killed because people are then scared about talking about the things they're passionate about?
Well, and I think what you're referring to is sort of an arbitrary application of it to make a point or to further a cause that may not need to be furthered. You know, Newt Gingrich may be angry because there are YouTube videos of him in his, you know, worst phase when he was the Speaker of the House. So that's the key, is we need to think about it before it happens. And now that it has happened, we need to not look at suppression of information. That's never the key. We need to look at how to better monetize the individuals who are investing in producing that trailer and have a vested interest in incurring revenue from it.
There's been a lot of buzz, as we had kind of alluded to earlier, about Google search providing results that are more in favor of their products and services. Do you have anything to share about that?
Well, it's using information. So basically, I have a Google Plus account, and when I go to Google Plus and I post things and click on things, Google takes note of that. And they will now incorporate that into determining what search results I should see when I'm logged into my Google account. What we should be much more concerned about is Google's revision of its privacy policies, which has been very much in the news these days, and basically says that Google is now going to be sharing information across all of your accounts.
And why is that damaging, do you think?
They are less than articulate about how they use that information. They are very articulate about how we won't share it with anybody unless we think they're a worthwhile person or it's the government. But they are less forthcoming about how they use that information to enhance their products, to suppress competition, or to find out more about us.
Angel, do you have a comment?
Yeah, on a micro level, I mean, Bing does not have an affiliate program, where Google does have an affiliate program. And in that program, retailers who have their products uploaded to the Google affiliate network, their products will show more often on search than someone that's in Google Base. Google Base is open to everybody, but because the affiliate network Google actually making extra cash on, they're preferring those products, but telling users on both the affiliate network and in Google that isn't actually happening. But if you do enough testing back and forth, you'll see definitely products that are favored in the Google affiliate network versus normally on Google Base.
Wow, it seems like there's so much. We could talk about this another time. Looks like we're out of time, though. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my first guest, Marianne Sweeney of Daedalus Information Systems. To learn more about her services, visit DaedalusInfoSystems.com. And our second guest, Angel Jambosov of Revenews, that's REVENEWS.com. Visit their site to learn about his publications and services. For an archive of today's program, links to our guests' websites, or to sponsor this show, check out our website at MYB Media. Support for Minding Your Business is provided in part by Sandler Training. Learn more at toptiertraining.sandler.com. From Money Radio KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, tools and information for the business of your life and the life of your business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
Been listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.